I taught him how to lie, how to listen, how to own a room without touching a soul. But I never taught him loyalty. Now every smile I see could be his. Every whisper, a grenade with no pin. He doesn't want the spotlight. He wants the whole script. And the war has already started. A war of silence, of mirrors, of ghosts we built in each other's image. This isn't about control anymore. It's about who survives the story. If you haven't already, make sure to follow us and tap the notification bell. We drop new content every day. Stay tuned so you never miss a story. Chapter 1. The Echo in the Hallway. Imitation isn't flattery. It's theft. It's declaration. It's war, dressed in your clothes, walking in your shoes, wearing your fucking smile like it belonged to them first. You don't realize what's happening at first. It creeps in. A phrase repeated. A glance held a beat too long. A story you planted weeks ago. Retold by a mouth you never spoke it to. And then the echo becomes a voice. And that voice becomes a shadow. And suddenly, you're no longer alone in the mirror. Evan was a problem, but not in the way most people are. He didn't make noise. He didn't take credit. He didn't even fight back when I tried to push him down the social food chain again. He just adapted. Silently. Perfectly. The more I distanced myself from him, the more he started to replace me. Not publicly. Not with praise. With whispers. With presence. He moved like I used to. He manipulated like I had taught myself to. But Evan was cleaner. Colder. I used to call myself a ghost. But now, I felt haunted. I watched him from across the hallway that morning. He was leaning against a row of lockers, listening to a freshman spiral over being dumped. He nodded, comforted, let the silence stretch long enough for them to fill it with guilt. And when he smiled, it was mine, that slow, tilted grin, the one I'd practiced in the mirror when I was 12, the one that made people open their hearts and lock their logic in a box. He saw me watching, and for the first time, he didn't look away. He just held my gaze, long, flat, like he was daring me to admit the obvious. You're not in control anymore. I wanted to confront him, corner him, rip the curtain off whatever act he thought he was performing. But that would give him something he hadn't earned yet. Acknowledgement. And that's the thing about war. You don't announce it. You bleed it into the spaces in between. You make your enemy wonder if the silence means you've surrendered, or if you're just waiting to strike. So I watched, listened, and I started to do what I do best. I gathered patterns. Evan was good, but he wasn't flawless. He had tells. He flinched slightly when girls cried. He overused empathy when he didn't know the backstory. And his reach. It was horizontal, not vertical. He played wide, but he didn't play deep. He spread influence fast, but not in ways that lasted. He wasn't building loyalty. He was building noise. And noise can be used. Redirected. Burned. So I made a choice. I wouldn't silence him. I'd let him echo louder, until people were so familiar with his voice, that when I finally exposed the real one behind it, the imitation would crack. Because Evan didn't want power. Not like me. He wanted recognition. And that made him vulnerable. Because the second you need to be seen, you're already playing by someone else's rules. Chapter 2, The Confessional Trap. Confession is a currency. The most expensive kind. People think they're giving it freely. They think it brings them closer to others. But confession is never free. It's a trade. And I've learned the right kind of confession can bankrupt a person's entire identity. All you need to do is set the stage. Make them believe they're safe. Then wait for the truth to come to you. On its knees. Evan was rising. His influence was growing. But that meant his need to be believed was growing, too. He wanted to be trusted. Not just feared. Not just known. He wanted people to think he was authentic. And that I could use. Because the hunger to be seen is the fastest path to being exposed. So I created the perfect trap. I called it the confessional. I started telling people I was stepping back. That I was too emotionally drained from the leadership load. That I was ready to empower others. Soft phrases. Empty vulnerability. The kind of language that signals retreat. Without ever actually stepping down. Then I made a suggestion at the next wellness meeting. Let's create a peer-led safe space. A weekly circle. No authority figures. Just us. It was approved immediately. Of course it was. I had built the reputation. I was still their symbol. But I wouldn't be the one leading it. I asked if Evan could. I said he had the heart for it. said he, reminded me of myself. Everyone agreed, because Evan wasn't just trusted now. He was endorsed by me, and that meant he couldn't say no. The first meeting was on a Thursday, 10 people in a circle, lights dim, soft music in the background. Evan sat at the center, smiling, like a god at the pulpit. He thanked everyone, opened the space with some recycled quote about vulnerability. Then he asked the question that I knew he wouldn't be able to resist. What's one secret you've never told anyone, but are ready to let go of? The room tensed. This was it. My move. I raised my hand slowly. All eyes on me. Even Evan's. I looked down, spoke softly, shaky breath. And I said, when I was younger, I manipulated people because I was scared. Because control was the only thing that made me feel real. Silence. Perfect silence. Someone reached for my hand. I let them. Then I smiled. Not at them, but at him. At Evan. Because I knew what I'd just done. I'd handed the room my worst truth. Framed as healing. Not control. And now, anything he said after that would look like imitation. Would feel like competition. He hesitated. Just a second. But I saw it. He swallowed. Forced his voice steady. Then he said, I used to isolate people I didn't understand, because making them feel small made me feel bigger. It was clean, neat, believable, but not raw, not broken. And in that moment, he lost the room. Not dramatically, not obviously, but slowly. The eyes shifted, the body language tilted, sympathy reattached to me. And Evan, he wasn't just a reflection anymore. He was a replica. And replicas break when the original reclaims its place. Later that night, he cornered me. Out by the bikes. No one around. He didn't shout. Didn't threaten. He just stared. And said, that wasn't real. And I whispered back, neither is this war. Not to them. And I walked away. Leaving him there. Under a flickering light. No applause. No smiles. Just the crushing weight of a truth I already knew. The best way to beat an imitator is to make them confess to being second. Chapter 3, The First Crack in the Glass. It wasn't supposed to go that far. Not really. The trap, yes. The confession, of course. But the damage, the unraveling, that look in Evan's eyes, like something inside him had fractured and wasn't coming back, that wasn't part of the plan. Or at least, that's what I told myself. The thing about breaking someone, you don't always hear the sound. Not right away. Sometimes it's a slow fracture. Hairline. Invisible. Spreading beneath the surface until one day. Snap. And the worst part, you don't even remember when you did it. A week after the confessional, Evan stopped showing up. Not just to the circles. To class. To everything. Rumors buzzed. Sickness. Family emergency. Mental health break. But I knew. I knew the signs of someone falling inward. Because I'd lived there once. And I had dragged others into that darkness more times than I could count. I should have felt victorious. I should have felt relief. But what I felt instead was cold. Not the kind of cold that comes from losing control. The kind that comes from realizing you might have finally won, but at a cost even you hadn't calculated. I checked the library archives after hours. I dug through old student records. Looked for patterns. Searched Evan's digital fingerprints. He had been quiet for years. But there were signs. A history of isolation. A transfer from another district. A counselor's note. Displays obsessive mimicry behaviors. Recommend monitoring. He wasn't just copying me. He was trying to become something else. And I'd handed him the blueprint. That night, I dreamt of mirrors. Rows of them. All showing versions of myself. Smiling, smirking, screaming. In one of them, my reflection looked exactly like Evan. Except, he didn't blink. And when I turned away from the mirror, he kept watching. The next morning, Evan returned. Thin. Quiet. Eyes different. People cheered. Hugged him. Asked if he was okay. He said nothing. Just smiled. A smile I didn't recognize. And that's when I knew. He hadn't broken. He'd recalibrated. He wasn't trying to copy me anymore. He was trying to surpass me. And for the first time since this war began, I didn't know who was setting the stage anymore. I only knew the next crack. Wouldn't be in the mirror. It would be in me. Chapter 4. Reflections can cut. Mirrors don't just reflect. They cut. They split you open. Show you pieces of yourself you spent years trying to bury. And if you're not careful, they'll turn your own weapons against you. I knew Evan was planning something. I could feel it. The way students glanced at me and quickly looked away. The sudden coldness from teachers who used to trust me. The way conversations paused when I entered a room. Not with curiosity, but with calculation. Someone had planted something. A rumor. A doubt. And it was spreading faster than anything I had ever orchestrated. The first blow came during a student council forum. I wasn't running for anything. Didn't need to. My reputation alone opened doors. But the moment I stood to make a supportive comment, the room shifted. Whispers. Laughter. Eyes cutting into me like scalpels. And then, someone asked the question, loud enough to silence the entire gym. Is it true you manipulate people just to see if you can? There it was. The word. Manipulate. Thrown into the open like a corpse at a dinner party. I froze. Not visibly. I smiled. Chuckled. Shrugged it off. Said something about misunderstandings and growth. But inside, I burned. Because no one had ever dared to say it out loud before. Not even my enemies. Afterward, I traced it back. Had to know where the rot started. It led to a rumor. A confession. One that sounded familiar because it was mine. Twisted. Rewritten. A tale about how I had once admitted to manipulating friends as practice. Private sessions. Library chats. Late night texts. All woven into a story that painted me as cold. Clinical. Sociopathic. And worse, it was believable. Because Evan hadn't made it up. He had listened. Memorized. Recycled my real vulnerabilities. The ones I thought I'd disguised as honesty. And weaponized them against me. I didn't know whether to be furious. Or impressed. Because this wasn't just imitation anymore. This was surgery. Precision strikes. Turning every act of staged compassion I had ever performed into a self-inflicted wound. And the best part, he stayed invisible. Never once directly accusing. Never once taking credit. Just letting the echoes destroy me. You see, when people suspect you're a liar, they start rewriting their own memories. They fill in blanks you never left. They remember conversations differently. They reinterpret every kindness as cruelty in disguise. I didn't need to be guilty. I just needed to be possible. And Evan had made sure of that. That night, I stood outside the school, rain soaking through my hoodie, watching lights flicker off one by one, wondering how many of the people inside still believed in me, wondering if it even mattered anymore. Because reflections don't need to be accurate to cut you open. They just need to be sharp enough. Chapter 5, The War Beneath Their Smiles. You wouldn't know we were at war. Not by the way we walked past each other in the halls. Not by the way we exchanged polite nods in staff meetings, assemblies, shared spaces. We smiled. We always smiled. Because in this war, weapons aren't fists. They're rumors sharpened into razors. They're memories, bent until they become nooses. They're truth and lie, twisted so tightly together that even the victims can't tell which one cut them. And Evan? Evan was smiling wider than ever. They say two mirrors facing each other create infinity. That's what it felt like now. Every move I made reflected. Every silence I created echoed back louder. He wasn't copying anymore. He was countering. If I built trust with a student, he'd quietly undermine it. If I tried to steer the school narrative, he'd flood it with carefully seeded doubt. Even my old rescues, people I'd pulled out of darkness, started slipping out of orbit. Not because they hated me, because they weren't sure anymore if I had ever really helped them at all. That's when I realized, this wasn't about replacing me. It was about erasing me. Not publicly, not in disgrace, but emotionally, as if I'd never mattered. As if my entire existence had just been a phase. I launched my own counteroffensive. Targeted whispers. False confessions from concerned students. Strategic misdirection, designed to make Evan look manipulative, unstable, cruel. It should have worked. But Evan wasn't defending himself. He let it all happen. Silent. Smiling. And somehow, still gaining ground. Because while I was trying to win, he was trying to end me. And then came the final move. A school-wide anonymous letter, titled, The Masked Therapist, A Manipulator Among Us. It was written like a journal entry, exposing stories, moments, specific phrases, mine, recounted by multiple voices. No name, no direct accusation, just a pattern, a shadow, an invitation for the school to question what had once been considered admirable. And it worked, because it wasn't a scandal, it was a seed, and once you plant doubt, it doesn't die easy. The next day, I walked into class and felt it. The shift. Not hatred. Worse, disinterest. No one avoided me. No one challenged me. They just stopped seeing me. The myth I'd built, the power I'd carefully layered over every interaction, it was peeling off in real time. And Evan, he didn't even look at me. He didn't need to. Because this war was never about defeating me. It was about removing the need for me entirely. I stood in the bathroom that afternoon, staring at the mirror. No smile. No mask. Just the version of me left behind when power stops echoing. And I whispered, "You made me." Because he had. He was my shadow. My reflection. My fault. But now, he wasn't my echo anymore. He was the architect of his own silence. And I had no blueprint for that. The world doesn't need two manipulators. So one of us has to disappear. The only question is, will it be the one who started the game? Or the one who learned how to finish it?